perhaps the news story that's at the top of the list right now is President Bush's selection of Alberto Gonzalez to succeed John Ashcroft as U.S. Attorney General. We're going to be talking with Phyllis Schlafly of the Eagle Forum here about that and about legal challenges that are already being mounted in the courts to the gay marriage bans passed last week during the election in two states, Georgia and Oklahoma. We're going to talk about those challenges and the fact that on that day, November 2nd, 11 bans on gay marriage of various forms were passed in 11 different states. Those two are being challenged. We'll talk about that with Phyllis Schlafly here in the first 25 minutes of Issues Etc. She'd be kind enough to join us here in just a moment. Dr. Peter Scare will join us after that. We'll spend the remainder of this first hour. No, I'm sorry. Let me back up and do that again. Dr. Peter Scare will be with us in the middle of the second hour of the program. In the in-between time, Jerry Falwell, Thomas Road Baptist Church, shows his people a map at the beginning of his Sunday announcements, a map of the United States, county by county, red and blue. And we'll have a little bit of that audio there for you to hear. Here's the question I've got for you, and this comes from an article that I found on BeliefNet.com. The title of the article is, Did God Intervene? Evangelicals are crediting God with securing re-election victory for George W. Bush. There are several quoted, Charles Colson, Richard Land, Paul Weyrich. We'll be talking about that during the Open Lines Hour. That's from about 3:20 until middle of the second hour of the program, about an hour of Open Lines for your questions and your comments, and I really do want your answer to that question. Did God intervene? Was it God's work that George W. Bush was elected? In fact, Richard Land goes so far as to say that whoever would have won, it would have been God's will, but the fact that George W. Bush was elected shows that God is blessing America rather than cursing America. We'll talk about that during Open Lines. I'd like your reaction and your response as well. Then, Dr. Peter Scare will join us in the middle of the second hour. The Passion of the Christ in the Gospel of Luke. The ancient Greeks and Romans were fascinated with death. They venerated the idea of a noble death. How does Luke portray the death of Jesus Christ to a Greco-Roman audience in his gospel? We'll talk about that with Dr. Peter Scare for about a half hour. Then in the third hour, Dr. Angela Lunfranchi joins us. She has a chapter in this book, The Cost of Choice. The link between abortion and breast cancer will be the question that we'll be dealing with. We've talked with her about this before, and we need to just basically answer a simple question. How do you establish a link between one thing and another? Is there a legitimate medical link demonstrable between abortion and a higher risk for women of breast cancer? She'll answer that question in the third hour of the program. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Phyllis Schlafly is our first guest. She is president of Eagle Forum. She's author of several books, including her latest, The Supremacists, The Tyranny of Judges, and How to Stop It. Phyllis, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks so much, Todd. Always good to talk to you.
First of all, the news is breaking about Alberto Gonzalez being President Bush's pick to succeed John Ashcroft as U.S. Attorney General. What do you make of it?
I think that's all right. He's certainly a close friend of the president's, and I would hope that he would do a good job as Attorney General.
Now, he has...
I hope that means that the president has given up on any plans to put him on the Supreme Court.
Why is that? What would be your concern about Gonzalez being on the Supreme Court?
We are concerned that he's not adequately pro-life, but that's all right for Attorney General. He will have to enforce the law the way it is.
So why is it an issue? Just let's make this clear. Why is it an issue? Because he has been credited with submarining Priscilla Owen when she was up for a federal bench. He, on the Texas Supreme Court, ruled against a parental notification bill that came before the Texas Supreme Court.
That was a very ugly opinion that he wrote, and we object to that very much. That is why we would certainly oppose him if he were nominated for the judiciary. I don't have that problem about Attorney General.
Why is that? Why not a problem with Attorney General?
Well, because the judges think they they can rewrite or evolve the law and do something that maybe the legislature didn't decide, whereas the Attorney General's job is to enforce the law as it's written. and we may not like some of the laws. We're trying to change some of the laws, but I don't think the Attorney General can do that. He has to deal with the laws that are written. So I don't have a problem with this appointment.
Phyllis, it looks like Chief Justice Rehnquist will not be back in any major way, and very likely will be retiring at some point very soon from the Supreme Court. Could you give us a short list of Supreme Court nominees that you would prefer?
I don't think that would be wise for me to do that. I don't know. You know, the NARAL and Planned Parenthood are so vicious and so active. They're working hard to get Specter nominated for the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. They're ready for an all-out mother of all battles on the Supreme Court nominee. And I don't believe I should be out there with the names of anyone. But I will tell you that in the debate, the second debate, President Bush said, they asked him what kind of judges he would appoint. And he said, well, I certainly wouldn't appoint somebody who would say we can't recite the Pledge of Allegiance with the words under God in it. And I think that's a very good litmus test. I think that it should be applied to any nominee. And we want to make sure that his judges will take a new look at Roe v. Wade, and we want to make sure that they're not going to continue with this aggressive hostility to religion that the court has carried on in the last several decades. And I think those are very important issues. We want constitutionalist judges, not judges who are going to invent new rights. You know, one of the most recent rights that some federal judge is trying to invent is the right of prisoners to have tax-paid pornography while they're in prison. And the one before that was the right of retailers to sell video games to teenagers to show them how to kill policemen. We can't have judges inventing new rights like this. We want constitutionalist judges, and I think that should be our primary focus.
Senator Arlen Specter, you mentioned him before. Very shortly after the election last week, made some rather defiant comments about what would happen if he were serving as the chairman of the Judiciary Committee there in the Senate with regard to judicial nominees. It sounds as though he's making an attempt to retract some of those statements or back off of them. What do you make of his retraction?
Well, I think he led with his chin, and he made some very insulting remarks, insulting to the president, to these fellow senators, and to the American people, who just said decisively in this election that we respect moral values, and the pro-lifers turned out in force, and we expect reform in the judiciary. And he kind of threw cold water in the faces of everybody. And so I hope the senators will deny him the chairmanship of the Judiciary Committee. He's not the sort of person who has a temperament to deal with that. And we are telling all of the members of the Judiciary Committee to vote no on Specter, all the members of the Republican Leadership Caucus to vote no on Specter. Surely they can find somebody else who's not so offensive to large numbers of Republicans.
Who should be the chairman of the Judiciary Committee?
Well, they're just obsessed with this idea of seniority. The next one in line is John Kyle of Arizona, and he would be a very fine chairman. Well, actually, the next one in line is Senator Grassley of Iowa. But Senator Grassley is said that he really doesn't want it. He likes being chairman of the Finance Committee. It would be fine if Senator Grassley would take it. He's a very fine conservative and pro-lifer, and although he's not a lawyer, he's a very fair-minded man, and I think that would be a good choice. And the next one after that is Senator Kyle of Arizona. Either one of them would be acceptable. But Specter's statements are just so outrageous. He said that Roe v. Wade should be inviolate. That means you wouldn't consider even limiting it in any way. And, of course, there wasn't any constitutional justification for Roe v. Wade. The judges just created this new right of abortion out of whole cloth, and we do need to revisit that.
At this point, Phyllis, it appears as though the White House is not saying that Specter's out of the running. It sounds as though they're still, at least as far as they can influence the decision, going to stand behind Arlen Specter for the Judiciary Committee head.
Well, I think at the moment, I think they're kind of leaving him out there to hang, to see where public opinion goes. This is why I urge everybody listening to this program to contact your U.S. senators. And we have two very influential ones in Missouri, Senator Talent and Senator Bond. They are not on the Judiciary Committee, but they certainly know how to speak up. and tell them to use their good influence to tell the rest of the senators, we don't want Specter as head of the judiciary. The problem of the judges, the supremacist judges who think they're smarter than the rest of us and want to rule over the other branches of the government, has got to be dealt with. And Senator Specter seems to like the judges the way they are.
Phyllis Schlafly is our guest, president of the Eagle Forum, author of several books, including her latest, The Supremacists, The Tyranny of Judges, and How to Stop It. You can purchase this book by calling Spence Publishing. Their toll-free number, 1-888-SPENPUB, 1-888-SPENPUB. You can also read an excerpt of The Supremacists and order it online at www.spencepublishing.com, www.spencepublishing.com.
And it's an excellent handbook for the average citizen to know that you can do something about the imperial judiciary. We don't have to just stand around with our thumbs in our mouths and say whatever they say is the law of the land as they proceed to rewrite the Constitution.
Last week, 11 ballot initiatives passed fairly overwhelmingly in 11 different states on Election Day, in one way or another having to do with defining marriage as a man and a woman. Some of them allowed civil unions. Some of them specifically did not allow civil unions. Two of them, at last count, are under legal attack, one in Georgia, one in Oklahoma. Those who are attacking the one in Georgia are saying, look, this ballot initiative that was put before the voters on November 2nd was not understood by the voters. They voted for something they didn't quite understand. It wasn't clear. They were getting a pig in a poke, and therefore the vote of the people ought to be overturned. Your reaction?
I hope you were smiling when you said that. That doesn't pass. That doesn't pass the laugh test. People understand perfectly well that those amendments were to protect traditional marriage of a man and a woman as husband and wife. And the idea of the gay rights lobby going into court and trying to get activist judges to overturn the will of the people in those states is unacceptable. And that's why we call them supremacist judges. We just simply cannot tolerate this type of an oligarchy running our country. The people have spoken. The marriage amendments passed in 11 states. If they were on the ballot in 50 states, they probably would have passed everywhere.
Now, the argument being made in Oklahoma in the legal challenge being mounted there has to do with the tax code. The argument being made is, look, the reason these state amendments against gay marriage are unconstitutional is because you can file, say, jointly in under U.S. taxes as a married couple, if you're same-sex. But your state says, no, you can't file jointly because we ban gay marriage here. Ergo, you don't know how to file your taxes. Those are the kind of dilemmas that are being put up in front of the court to say, look, these bans on gay marriage are just unworkable. They're going to cause so much trouble. How do you react to that, Phyllis?
Well, it's not a dilemma. The tax code says you can file a joint income tax return if you're a husband or wife. And if you don't meet those qualifications, you can't. The tax code of 1,000 pages is very complicated. You have to meet all the requirements to claim all the deductions. And if you're not a husband or wife, you don't get a husband or wife deduction. And the idea that the gay rights lobby could go in and get activist judges to overturn the law, that's what they're asking you to do because the law very clearly says husband and wife, is just simply not acceptable. If you want to change the law, the way to do it is to go to the legislature or the Congress and introduce, get a sponsor and introduce a bill to repeal what you don't like. But they can't do that. Their whole game plan of the gay rights lobby is to run into court and get some judge in black robes to rewrite the laws. Now, we don't believe in this. As President Bush said, we are not going to stand for judges who are legislating from the bench and remaking our culture through court order.
Now, let's talk about a federal marriage amendment, if we could, for just a moment. We've talked before, and I think you have said, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you've said that you prefer, at least at this point, a bill that would tell the Supreme Court you cannot fiddle with the DOMA statute at the federal level. Tell us about that.
Well, that's the power that Article 3 gives to the U.S. Congress, the power to limit the jurisdiction or define what cases the federal courts can hear or not hear. And I'm very happy to tell you that in the fall, the U.S. House did pass the Todd Akin bill to say they can't hear a challenge to the Pledge of Allegiance, and the John Hostetler bill to say they can't hear a challenge to the Defense of Marriage Act. The Senate did not act, but it's going to be a major goal of Eagle Forum, and I hope of everybody who reads my book, The Supremacist, The Tyranny of Judges, and How to Stop It, to push for this legislation in the new Congress. It is the way to curb the arrogance of these out-of-control judges.
Phyllis Schlafly, president of Eagle Forum, author of several books, including her latest, The Supremacists, The Tyranny of Judges, and How to Stop It. That book can be had at Spence Publishing. You can also read an excerpt of it at their website, www.spencepublishing.com, or you can call them toll-free, 1-888-SPENPUB, 1-888-SPENPUB. Ask for the book, The Supremacists, The Tyranny of Judges, and How to Stop It by Phyllis Schlafly. Phyllis, thank you for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd. Always good to talk to you.
I want to thank the Lord that on this Sunday it is morning in America. And we are grateful to him. Can you imagine? Last Sunday, we asked you to pray. We asked you to vote. We asked you to get out the vote. And we're on national television now, and it's the day after, the week after the election. Everything's legal. You can say anything you want to. And I want to put a map up on the screen. The red is us. Yes, indeed.
And that, of course, is Jerry Falwell, feeling a little nostalgic for the Reagan days, Morning in America, and showing his people during the announcement time Sunday morning at Thomas Road Baptist Church, where he is pastor for almost the better part of 50 years, showing them a map of the United States, state by state, county by county, red and blue. He said, "That's us. The red is us." I want to talk about this during this segment of Open Lines, Issues, Etc. We're going to begin right now. He wants to thank God it's morning in America. George W. Bush was reelected. He went on to say that the left did their best. They threw everything they had, plus the kitchen sink, at George W. Bush. But Christians went out and stood in the rain, and they voted, and they stayed late, and they did what they had to do. And he called it at one point, the election of 2004, a miracle. A miracle. I was looking through BeliefNet.com this morning, and I came across this article, found it very interesting, called "Did God Intervene? Evangelicals are crediting God with securing re-election victory for George W. Bush." This is how the article begins. I'll get to my question here in just a moment. On the day after President Bush was re-elected, he gave much of the credit to his political advisor, Karl Rove, whom he called the architect of his campaign. But in evangelical churches, on Christian radio, I would say with the exception of this program, perhaps, in voter precincts dominated by conservative Christians, the credit is going instead to someone a whole lot more powerful than even Karl Rove. God. The Almighty intervened in the U.S. election, these evangelicals believe, to allow Bush to remain president. They say God has, quote-unquote, blessed America with Bush, and had Senator Kerry been elected, God would have cursed the U.S. By allowing Bush to be re-elected, God has given America, quote, more time to stop its slide into evil. Well, this, of course, caught my attention. How could it not? And then there's a number of quotes. The first from Charles Colson, the second from Richard Land, and then the third from Paul Ryrick. Here they are in succession. My question for you, by the way, was the 2004 election an act of God? Did God intervene to see to it that George W. Bush was reelected? At one point, Jerry Falwell calls it a miracle. I guess that's one way of putting the question. I'm wondering, did God have a stake in this election? Can we credit God with securing re-election for George W. Bush? My question for you, I'd like your answer. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. A lot of people think that God did have a hand in this. This is Chuck Colson. He, by the way, in the weeks leading up to the election, was on a week-by-week teleconference with Karl Rove at the White House and others at the White House. "This was providence," says Colson. "Anyone looking at the 2000 election would have had to say it was a miracle, a miraculous deliverance. and I think people felt it again this year. Colson said that God is, quote, giving us a chance to repent and to restore some moral sanity to American life. Do you agree? With the election of George W. Bush, is God giving us a chance to repent and restore some moral sanity to American life? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines, issues, etc. Richard Land has this to say. He, of course, is probably the leading light in the Southern Baptist Convention. He also participated in the weekly strategy sessions with the White House leading up to the election. He says, whoever won, it would have been God's will. But he went on to say, the Bible says godly leadership is a sign of God's blessing, and a lack of godly leadership is a sign of God's judgment. I don't see Kerry as a godly leader. Ergo, I would conclude, based upon his formula there, that Kerry would have been a sign of God's judgment had he been elected. Do you agree? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And one more, Paul Weyrich said this, God gave this president and this president's party one more chance. God heard the fervent prayers of millions of values voters. I guess that's why God hears your prayers, is because you're a values voter, and kept his hand on America one more time, despite our national sins of denying the right to life, despite ignoring the biblical injunction against acts which are an abomination unto the Lord, and despite the blatant attempt to remove God from the public square. One more chance, says Paul Weyrich of the Free Congress Foundation. What do you think? It's open lines, issues, etc. 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. Going into this break, let's talk with Jeff, who's calling from his car. Jeff, welcome.
Hi, Pastor Todd.
Hey.
Hey, I was just wanting to say, do I think that God intervened? No, I don't think he intervened, and what was his plan anyway? I mean, whether or not President Bush won the re-election, or even if John Kerry won the re-election, it would have been God's plan no matter what happened.
Was it God's Was it the difference between blessing and curse, Jeff? Because two of these evangelicals here say that it's really a matter of blessing and curses. It would have been God's will either way, but George W. Bush's re-election is a sign of God's blessing, whereas Kerry's election would have been a sign of God's judgment or of curse. What do you make of that?
Oh, I don't think so. I think because, like when Jesus told Pilate, you know, I guess it was Pilate, that, you know, Jesus said that, you wouldn't have no power above me if it wasn't given you from God. And so, you know, even no matter who our president is, it was God-given anyway.
Jeff, thank you for the call. We're going to a break here. Thank you very much. Let's see what the rest of you think. This break is a great time to call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. As we speak, George W. Bush is pushing forward a pro-choice judge for attorney general to replace the pro-life former everything, John Ashcroft, as Attorney General. He has been elected in the minds of many of his supporters, evangelicals in particular, as a godly man, the one that God put forward, God's choice to bless America. What do you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. More open lines when we come back from this break. Stay tuned.
A voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
You know, you can walk into just about any Christian bookstore, and you're sure to find lots of advice on the subject of parenting. But most of these books contain lots of psychology and very little theology, lots of law and very little gospel. That's why Issues Etc. and Concordia Publishing House are excited about our Books of the Month for November. Two books from the series titled Faithfully Parenting. For more information, call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Or to find out more about the Faithfully Parenting series on our website, just check issuesetc.org and click the What's New section. You can order Faithfully Parenting Teens or Faithfully Parenting Preschoolers for only $9.99 each, plus shipping and handling. 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org. Two books from the Faithfully Parenting series, our Issues Etc. Books of the Month for November.
Patriotism is on display this month in Taiwan, where people celebrate Double Ten. This Global Minute lets you hear it's a political holiday, but it has spiritual overtones. A battle on October 10, 1911, brought down the Manchu dynasty and eventually led to the People's Republic of China, which we refer to as Taiwan. Traditional dances and music mix with parades, dignitaries, and celebrities making speeches. The holiday is called Double Ten since the numbers of the month and the day are the same. Pray for Taiwan. There's religious freedom, and yet so many families don't respond to Christ's offer of eternal life. Pray Chinese Christians and the missionaries working there will effectively teach others so churches will be strengthened and grow. There are about 23 million people in Taiwan, and it's estimated only a few percent follow Christ. Learn about spiritual needs around the world so you can pray at missionvisionnetwork.org. That's missionvisionnetwork.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. William Schneider writes in the National Journal, voters who said they attend church at least once a week voted 61% for Bush. The unchurched voted 64% for Kerry. Voters concerned about moral issues delivered the vote for Bush nearly 80%. The smug are shocked, writes Joel Achenbach in the Washington Post. Moral issues gnaw at the guts of people who think they know right from wrong and normal from sick. Some historical forgetfulness in that, though. Although positive about the influence of religion, George Washington usually left church before communion. He was a deist who rejected the divinity of Christ. Alexander Hamilton, influenced by deism and Episcopal Christianity, urged Congress in 1797 to rouse the religious ideas of America. The next year he attacked Thomas Jefferson for a conspiracy to establish atheism on the ruins of Christianity. 2 years later, he urged the formation of a Christian constitutional society to work against his political opponents. When Thomas Jefferson argued against every form of tyranny over the mind of man, he was talking about organized Christianity. Nothing new under the sun. The good news for traditional Christians is our politically incorrect values are now plainly on the table for societal discussion. The smug have noticed that we believe.
There's a congregation whose doors are open for you, right in the heart of the metropolitan area in Ladue. It's Village Lutheran Church, 9237 Clayton Road, just 1 mile west of the Galleria. Village Lutheran Church is an underwriter of Issues Etc. Their phone number, area code 314-993-1834. Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, www.villagelutheranchurch.org. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., the identity of Jesus in the New Testament. Who is he? Who do men say that I am? Who do you say that I am? How does the New Testament answer that question? Dr. Charles Geeshan of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be our guest tomorrow on the program. It's open lines until about 4:20, middle of the second hour, and then we'll be talking with Dr. Peter Scare about the Passion of Christ in the Gospel of Luke, a very interesting article he's written for Touchstone on a noble death, the noble death of Jesus Christ. It's open lines, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Anything you want to talk about. Now, here's the conclusion drawn by the author of the BeliefNet.com article. Listen to this. Many evangelicals think America is secular and decadent and in cultural decline. Their role, they believe, maybe this is you, is to stem that tide and renew the culture. Many of these Christians seem to believe that God will be angry with them and with the entire nation if they don't make big legislative changes. And so they put themselves on a short leash with God, and they hope to convince other Americans to do likewise. You know, I think this is a very accurate description of how evangelicals view their place in the culture. On a short leash with God. God is this close to losing his patience with all of us. And if he does, he might just allow John Kerry to get elected or someone like that. And as several of the evangelical leaders, Paul Weyrich and Richard Land together have said, as I quoted before, well, that's exactly the situation. God is this close to losing his patience with us, and he's given us one more chance. We can read into it, I guess. Had John Kerry been elected, that one more chance would not be there. We wouldn't have a chance to repent. What do you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I think a lot is hanging on this, and I don't view this as a political issue. I view this as a theological issue. Christians really do need to make up their mind. If God deals with us as a nation, if he deals with us as a nation, according to whom we elect, see, I don't know how it really works in their minds, because apparently if God intervened to get George W. Bush elected, then he's not really holding us accountable for who we elect. He's kind of determining who we elect, and then how could he hardly blame the nation for electing John Kerry? It seems to work both ways. I'm still trying to figure it all out, but I think it's a solidly theological question here. If God deals with us according to whether or not we are busy enough renewing the culture, and if God is going to either bless or curse the United States of America based upon whether or not we work hard enough to renew the culture, then we'd better get busy. If God's favor depends on this kind of stuff, we're in deep trouble. I mean, I think it's safe to say that if this is the formula by which God deals with people, then the United States, we're all doomed. We're all going to hell. Right? I mean, if we're talking about blessings and cursings and God's favor and God's disfavor and God's disapproval, the best thing we could do is hightail it out of America. If this is how God deals with people, find some place where God's wrath isn't resting. Well, at least according to the evangelical leaders quoted in this story, Richard Land, Paul Weyrich, and Chuck Colson, we're safe for now. We're safe for now because George W. Bush is president. We're given one more chance. This is our one last chance to curry favor with God. Am I misunderstanding this? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. There's one more quote in here, and then I want to talk about something else. This is Richard Land again. He looks to the Old Testament for proof of his theory about how God is dealing with America. He says, when God's people were idolatrous and rebellious, he sent justice, sometimes evil kings, sometimes foreign conquerors. He goes on to say, I've said on numerous occasions that if God would allow his chosen people to be taken off into captivity, don't think he won't judge the United States. So he is equating, at least in some sense, he's equating, drawing an equivalence between God's people and America. It's interesting he does not equate God's people with the church. But, okay, so he's equating God's people in America. Now, if God's people are the church, then shouldn't the church be more worried about renewing the church and reforming the church than the culture? I mean, if it is the idolatry of God's people that incurs the wrath of God, which is the model of the Old Testament, God's people incur God's wrath by being idolatrous, God's covenant people. Well, if God's people are the church, then I would think that evangelicals would be deeply concerned about renewing the church rather than the culture. But that's not what they're talking about. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Julia is calling from her car. Julia, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hello. My question is, how does George Bush get us to heaven or hell? In my Bible, it says that only we can get ourselves to heaven or hell.
Well, okay, let me play the devil's advocate.
Okay.
If I could for a moment.
Okay.
The election of George W. Bush is a signal that God's giving us one more chance to get it right. Now, if we don't get it right, the very least that's going to happen is we'll get bad, ungodly presidents.
Oh, gosh.
The worst that could happen is God, I mean, I've heard evangelicals say this, God would withdraw his hand of blessing from, they don't say curse, because evangelicals don't like to use the word curse.
Right.
God will withdraw his hand of blessing from our nation, and then who knows what's going to happen. Now, I don't know if they attach that to eternal salvation. It's hard to say. Apparently, God deals with this one way with regard to eternal salvation and another way when it comes to what kind of legislation we pass.
God only deals with us. I mean, our leaders have nothing to do with us being saved or not being saved. He deals with our hearts. And none of them are following the Ten Commandments in the first place.
It's a good point, Julia.
We just need to worry about ourselves. Because George Bush can't get us there, either can Kerry.
Thank you very much, Julia. What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. 2727. Let me give you a few thoughts on it. I do believe that the election of George W. Bush was providence. There's no doubt about it. Had Senator John Kerry been elected president, it would have also been providence. I think our first caller, Jeff, was absolutely right. Jesus says to Pilate, no godly ruler he. Jesus says to Pilate, you would have no authority over me except that which is given to you from above. Now, in a human sense, it had been Caesar who sent Pilate down to govern Palestine. But Jesus says, your authority doesn't come from Caesar, it comes from above. And Paul is pretty clear in Romans chapter 13 that the governing authorities, whatever they may be, none of them exist except as instituted by God. But I think the argument being made here by Richard Land and Paul Weyrich and Charles Colson is a little more subtle than that. I think their argument is, well, yes, of course, God controls the whole thing, and either way it would have been God's will, but the signal is God's will for us would have been curses and judgment had it been John Kerry, and blessings and one more chance if it were George W. Bush. You do realize what this means, though. This means we have 4 years. If this is really one more chance, I do wonder what Paul Weyrich will say if, say, we get a pro-life Republican president in 2008. Maybe the one more chance became, what, two more chances? Okay, I said it was one more chance, but now I really mean it, one more chance. You do realize with this means we've got 4 years. And the clock is ticking, but we have less than 4 years. Well, okay, the next Bush administration doesn't technically begin until inauguration, and inauguration is about 2 months away. So we've got 4 months, 2 years. And that's it. This is our last chance. I do not know what God wants us to change in the in-between time. Or maybe he's just going to give us an A for effort. Maybe he doesn't expect us to overturn Roe v. Wade or pass a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage. Maybe he doesn't expect us to get them done. Maybe he just hopes to see us try our best. Maybe he'll give us an A for an A, but how do you know? How do we know that at the end of 4 years, if God says, hey, you don't have an amendment banning gay marriage. I gave you another chance. You haven't overturned Roe v. Wade. I gave you another chance. You haven't gotten rid of those activist judges trying to take God out of the public square. I gave you another chance. I do wonder what the other shoe is that will drop in 4 years. Or is this just kind of loose lipped rhetoric on the part of these evangelicals when they say things like, God is giving us one more time. He's going to keep his hand on America. This is Paul Weyrich, one more time. He gave the president and this president's party one more chance. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We started out open lines hearing from Jerry Falwell of Thomas Road Baptist Church and of many other things, formerly, by the way, of the Moral Majority. Well, believe it or not, he's not only nostalgic for mourning in America, he's nostalgic for mourning in America and the Moral Majority as well. According to the news wires, and this is being reported today, the Reverend Jerry Falwell is launching a new organization called the Faith and Values Coalition, which he describes as a 21st century resurrection of the Moral Majority. I didn't know it was dead. I guess it had died. Did you know that? I didn't know that. The new coalition will lobby for pro-life judicial appointments, federal amendment barring same-sex marriage, and the election of another conservative president in 2008. I wonder who they have in mind. Falwell, who's now 71, and believe me, folks, he doesn't look it. This guy is well-preserved. I wouldn't put him at over 60. He says, following the sweeping re-election of President Bush and a new generation of conservative lawmakers nationwide, a new organization, the Faith and Values Coalition, has been launched. He's going to lead the thing, by the way, for at least 4 years. He said that the group would capitalize on the momentum of the November 2nd elections, quote, to maintain an evangelical revolution of voters who will continue to go to the polls and vote Christian. He points to the sign, county by county, in the United States. Most of them, the vast majority of those counties, red, and then there are pockets of blue. And he says, looky there, the red is us. Vote Christian. Now, I applaud the goals of this new Family and Values Coalition. I really do. The confirmation of pro-life, strict constructionist U.S. Supreme Court justices and other federal judges. That's a good thing. The passage of the Federal Marriage Amendment. I think that's a good thing. I wish we didn't have to amend the Constitution, but I think it's probably necessary. And then the election of another socially, fiscally, and politically conservative president in 2008. That's their goal, according to Jerry Falwell. He's launched this new thing. Falwell said that the election on election night 2004, as the returns came in, quote, I actually shed tears of joy as I saw the fruit of a quarter century of hard work of the 116 Americans who voted. And I think he means 116 million. More than 30 million were evangelical Christians who voted their moral convictions, he noted. I proudly say they voted Christian. Falwell credits Christian giants for turning out the vote. These are the names that he mentions in the article. James Dobson, Focus on the Family, Dr. Donald Wildman of America Family Association, D. James Kennedy, Coral Ridge Ministries, Dr. John Hagee, Cornerstone Church in San Antonio, and I think that's it. Yep, that's it. And himself, he said this was the 2004 was the result of, what did he say, decades of hard work. Now, there's an article. Where is this article here about evangelicals claiming credit? Here we go. This is from the Washington Post. Evangelicals say they led the charge for the GOP. Now, I recently interviewed Tim Gagelein, who is religious liaison to the White House with President George W. Bush. And I asked the question in the midst of that 10-minute interview, this was about a month and a half ago, whether or not George W. Bush was a puppet of the religious right. A question that you have to ask. This is the accusation that is so often made. And he said no. The president is his own man. He's beholden to no group, religious or otherwise. He makes his own decision. He is a religious man, but it's based on his own convictions, and he's not a puppet of the religious right. Perhaps I should have asked him whether or not it was the other way around, whether or not the religious right was a puppet of the president and his party, because according to the Washington Post article, the both of these groups, religious leaders, evangelical religious leaders in the United States and the White House, were working together in the weeks leading up to the election to basically mount a turnout the vote. And it's hard to tell who was leading who. There were definitely meetings between President Bush's political advisor, Karl Rove, with, and these are teleconferences on a weekly basis. But it's difficult to say, according to the Washington Post, exactly whether or not the evangelical turnout actually rose this year. It did rise, but how much is difficult to tell. And the reason for that is, and this is in another story that I found in the Washington Post, the reason it's difficult to tell whether or not the evangelical voters, how much they actually increased, is because the exit poll question that was put to voters in 2004 was different than the exit poll question that was put to voters in 2000. In 2000, the question at the exit poll being asked all the voters were, do you consider yourself a part of the conservative Christian political movement also known as the religious right? 14% in 2000 said yes, of all the voters. The question in 2004 was different. It was, would you describe yourself as a born-again or evangelical Christian? Now, that's a much broader question. And it also removes words like political movement, religious right. Well, the percentage jumped to 23%. And so polling specialists are saying, is there an apparent jump in the evangelical Christian vote because there were more Christians voting? Or is this jump due to the fact that we changed the question in the exit poll from, are you a member of the religious right, to, do you consider yourself a born-again evangelical Christian? Because both you and I know people who would say, I'm a born-again evangelical Christian, but if you say, are you a member of the religious right, some of them will say proudly yes, and some of them will say no. So if you ask a broader question, you're going to get more yeses. So the real question is, while people are assuming that the evangelical vote increased, marginally during this election, how much did it increase? And what's the cause of the apparent increase? Our call-in numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. E.J. Dion, you might have read about this in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch today. I found it someplace yesterday. He wrote the column actually Tuesday, a week after the election. It's called Moderates, Not Moralists. See, this all goes back to the question I asked before. We will hear the evangelical wing saying, this was God's doing. This was a move of God to get George W. Bush elected. But the move has a meaning. The meaning of this is one more chance, people, one more chance, and then that's it. I'm done with you. That's a pretty bold statement to be made by anyone. Now, you know, I understand the prophets of the Old Testament coming forth with a word of the Lord, God actually having spoken to them saying, one more chance and then I'm done with you. I understand that completely. It's a lot harder to take it seriously when it's coming from evangelical leaders who are, by their own admission, not claiming to be getting any direct revelation from the Lord. They're just reading political tea leaves and saying, George W. Bush was elected once, and we all kind of went, whew, and then he was elected twice. That must mean, I'm giving you one more chance, America, and then that's it. I'll bless you for four more years, and then it's going to be curses on you. With no direct word from God on the issue. I mean, when you say God is doing something, and this is why I say it's a specifically theological question. When you say God is doing something, or God is sending us a message, or God is trying to communicate something to us, you sure as heck better have something more solid than, well, the polls seem to indicate to me that God's giving us one more chance. Or this election seems to indicate to me that God is giving the Republicans one more chance to pull it off, to renew the culture. Is this how we determine what God's disposition toward a nation is? Or toward individuals? I want to hear from somebody who thinks, had John Kerry been elected, it would have signaled a curse from God on this nation. We've heard from two people so far who say no. That's not how you read the tea leaves politically. I want to hear from someone who says John Kerry's election would have meant a curse. George W. Bush's is at best a blessing and at least a reprieve for 4 years. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Here's E.J. Dion. John Kerry was not defeated by the religious right, he begins. He was beaten by moderates who went, reluctantly in many cases, for President Bush. This will be hard for many Democrats to take. Now, he makes a good point here, and I think we ought to hear this. This is a rare occasion where we will find the political left in America agreeing wholeheartedly with the religious right in America. Both the religious right and the political left in America are both saying in the last week, evangelical Christians came out and took over. Both Jerry Falwell and the Hollywood left says with some fear, those even crazy evangelical Christians are taking over, and Jerry Falwell says with a great bit of pride as he shows his people the county-by-county map of the United States, mostly red, the red is you. In essence, the left did its best, but you went out there and you took over. Both the religious right and the political left are saying exactly the same thing. E.J. Dion says they're both wrong. It's easier to solve the wounds by demonizing religious conservatives, says E.J. Dion. But the 2004 election, Democrats left votes on the table that could have created a Kerry majority. Considering these findings from the network exit polls. Now, I checked out these numbers. He's got them right. About 38% of those who thought abortion should be legal in most cases voted for President Bush. 38% of those who believe that abortion should be legal. Those are generally classified as pro-choice voters. 38% of them voted for President Bush. Bush got 22% of voters who favored gay marriage. And 52% of those who favored civil unions. 22% of the voters said that moral values were decisive in their choices. Now, if you add up the percentages, however, that means 78% of voters said something other than moral values were the primary factor in how they voted. So 22% of voters said that moral values were decisive in their choices, but 71% picked some other issue. Dion says all this means that Bush won not because there's a right-wing majority in the United States, but because the president persuaded just enough of the non-conservative majority to go his way. Even with their increased numbers, conservatives will constitute only 34% of the electorate. And this is true, evangelicals are saying, while we couldn't get a president elected by ourselves, you can't elect a president without us. That's true when you've got 34%. The largest share of the American electorate, 45%, calls itself moderate. The moderates went 54-45 for Kerry, but that was not good enough, of course. Dion says this as well. I'm just jumping here around his article. Everyone should notice that the Bush campaign knew it could not win without moderates. When Karl Rove went after the red-hot right-wing vote, he did so largely, not publicly, but through person-to-person contact, mailings, and conservative talkmeisters. Bush always spoke in code to this group, to the religious right. And he did. What do you think the word activist judges means? The religious right reads that as no gay marriage. They read the code. Now, if he were catering to the right, he would have said, I'm against gay marriage. But he frames the question consistently as, I'm against activist judges. It's code. He talked of a culture of life far more than he did about abortion. Reducing the risk of turning off the middle. You're right. I mean, if you're going to focus group a phrase, culture of life will probably offend fewer people than the word abortion does. We've got just a few seconds here before we wrap this up. Here's the point. If America's well-being hangs, if an American's well-being hangs on how the culture goes here, we are all doomed. If we really only have 4 more years to pull it off, then we can expect in 4 years all hell will break loose. I don't think that's what these evangelicals leaders are predicting. I think they're trying to, you know, get people fired up. But they're speaking of it in terms that are uniquely divine. They're saying that God is giving this nation one more chance. I'll tell you, folks, if God deals with us according to the elections, we are all going to hell. Thank God he deals with us according to the perfect obedience and death and resurrection of his son instead. We'll be right back.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.